Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
You're listening to the Kona Edge. I am Brad Brown. It's good to have you with us. Monday, I hope you had a good weekend. It's Monday as we are recording this. And towards the end of last week, I mentioned on the podcast that with it being the festive season and my brain being fried and I haven't had a vacation in a long time, I asked for emails and I got a flood of them. So to everyone who popped me an email, I will reply to them. I promise. It's just been a couple of crazy, crazy days. But everyone, things unanimous, telling me I need to take a break. So what I've decided to do is I don't leave you in the lurch. And I enjoy, funnily enough, listening to the podcast as well, even after I've done it. So I am a huge fan of the stories of how people got into triathlon and sort of just digging into the behind the scenes of what it takes to qualify for the Ironman World Championship. So what I've done is I've actually went and dug into our archives and pulled out a couple of the stories, my favorites, and hopefully they're your favorites too. I say they're my favorites. They've done all right on the downloads too. So I've picked out some of the most popular stories that are very deep in our archives. So if you've only discovered us in the last sort of year and a bit, you've probably not heard these. They're not available on the iTunes feed anymore, but they are deep, deep in our archives. So I thought I'd share them with you. And today I'm going to share the first one with you. We're going to hear from Doug Guthrie a little bit about how he got into the sport of triathlon. Before we get into Doug's story, though, just a quick heads up as we head towards the end of the year. Don't forget, you are running out of time if you want to get your name into the draw to win that Ironman entry. It's worth $750. I'm going to be doing the draw early in January. The entries close at the end of this month. So head over to thekonaedge.com/win. That's thekonaedge.com/win. That's where you can get your entry in. Fingers crossed, it could be you. I could be paying for you to race in 2017. And got a big announcement coming up as well, speaking of racing. But I'll save that for early in the new year. So that's all on the way. Enjoy Doug's story. We'll chat again tomorrow. Cheers. Today's Coach's Corner is brought to you by My Training Day Triathlon Academy, which was started in 2006 when Claire and Kent Horner realized their passion was helping other athletes reach their goals. My Training Day is home to online coaching, squad training, an online store, bike fitments, and nutrition assessments. What began with a handful of athletes has now grown exponentially, and Kent and Claire, along with 9 other My Training Day coaches, coach more than 280 athletes both nationally and internationally. My Training Day affiliated with Joe Frill in 2014, allowing access to a world of knowledge from one of the world's best-known original coaches. My Training Day makes use of tools such as Best Bike Split, Trainer Roads, and Training Peaks for power analysis, as well as Coach's Eye for video analysis. Their passion lies in helping others realize their full potential and reach their goals. My Training Day caters for any athletes from your complete novice right through to your elite athlete. To find out more about My Training Day Triathlon Academy, simply head over to mytrainingday.com, or to find out more, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. You can check them out there, as well as all our coaches in the Coach's Corner. And if you are a coach or have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured on the podcast and the website, simply head over to that URL, scroll right down to the bottom and get all the details there. That's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Doug, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. Doug, I love your story. I think it gives lots of people hope. You don't come from a sort of out and out. You've always been this magnificent athlete. You've made a couple of life choices along the way that's almost put you where you are today, that you've decided to take on triathlon and take it on seriously. But you weren't always the fittest and healthiest of guys around.
No, I wasn't. I played sports in high school. But then when I went to college, I went to the party life and really continued that into my late 30s, and then had to make a crucial life choice when I was sent to the emergency room with heart palpitations.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about you led the party last night. I think we've all had those times where we hang out on the dark side, probably some more than others and for longer than others. But it was lifestyle choices at the end of the day. I mean, and I think a lot of people do let things slide when they leave college. But for you, it's a gradual slide. And I think for most people it is. You get busy with work and life gets in the way. And before you know it, like you say, you're in the emergency room. Tell us a little bit about sort of how that happened. What led you to that emergency room?
Well, I had my own business and I was working 80, 90 hours a week. I was a subcontractor and it was a deal where you wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and you're on your way to the office, you're drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes and getting the work crews out. You're on the phone with building contractors and it's just very high stress. You skip lunch, get home late, you know, eat a not healthy dinner, have a few cocktails, you go to bed, you start over and do it again the next day. And 10 years of that without any type of vacation and you put yourself in a bad situation. And I ended up in the emergency room with heart palpitations. And after meeting with the cardiologist, told me I was going to have to be on heart medication for the rest of my life. And at 36 years old, that really wasn't a good proposition for me. So I asked the doctor, how do I change this? And I had to make a 180 degree lifestyle choice. No more drinking, smoking had to go, and I had to start exercising. So I got into the pool.
I love that. And as they say, the rest is history. When did the transition into triathlon take place?
Well, I swam for about a year and I started, I worked with a guy who's a very close friend of mine. He coaches the kids in the summer for their swim team. And he got me into the pool and I started swimming a lap at a time and built up to a mile. And about a year later, I was at the YMCA and was invited by a guy to participate in a sprint triathlon as the swim leg of a relay. And so I signed up and I was able to swim that quarter mile in just a little over 15 minutes. And for me, if I could have gotten to the gal on the kayak before the first buoy, that would have ended my triathlon career. It was not a good day. But came back again in a month and did another one. And we did much better. I did much better. And then the next year, I went off on my own. And I started doing the Olympics. And the second year, I signed up for an Ironman.
Let's talk about that decision to make the jump from a sprint to an Olympic and then eventually to Ironman. It's a big jump, and I think for a lot of people that's what psychs them out is the jump in distance and the amount of time you're going to be out there. Can you remember what went through your mind trying to convince yourself to make that decision?
Absolutely. It was in 2004. We had a phenomenon here in Florida where we had three hurricanes zip through in about a 90-day period. So we had no power. This was either Hurricane 2 or Hurricane 3. We had no power, and I had nothing to do but sit on my spin bike. So I sat on my spin bike for about 6 hours, and I thought, well, if I can sit on a spin bike for 6 hours, I can do an Ironman. So I had signed up for a half Ironman in September of that year. This was August, maybe. And so when we got power restored, I called the race director's staff and asked if I could up from a half to an Ironman. And she said, send me some money. And I did. And I did the Ironman.
I love that. And we'll chat about that race as well. But like a lot of people, first time Ironman, you decided you wanted to get an MDOT. And you've got a very cool story about your MDOT tattoo. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I did. I finished the race, and it was probably like most everyone else's. You know, there's ups and downs, and I remember the third lap of the run. The guy said, "How many laps do you have?" And I said, "This is it." He said, "You know, you have 6 miles, and you will be an Ironman." And you know, finishing that race was great. And it wasn't a WTC race; it was the Great Floridian here in Orlando, but I thought I need to get the tattoo to symbolize a couple of things. Number one, the life transformation, but number two, the commitment to maintain this lifestyle. I didn't want to be a 50-year-old guy on the beach. who was back in poor condition, and he proceeded to give me a little bit on the size of the tattoo that I had. And then I happened to mention to him that, you know, eventually, even though I've just finished my first Ironman and I have zero chance of ever qualifying for Hawaii, I would like to qualify for the Ironman World Championship someday. And if so, I would like to get a lei put around the neck of the dot. Well, at that point in time, he decided that he was going to give me a lecture on goal setting and asked me if I'd ever set a goal that I'd never achieved, and just the whole thing, the kind of thing you would expect from a sales manager if you were in a sales organization. So he sent me off and told me to come back in about an hour, and he would have that tattoo redesigned. Well, he took that small tattoo that I had, and he blew it up, put the lei around it, and I knew at that point in time I was really sticking my neck out. And I've always been taught to write your goals. Well, mine's permanent.
I love that story. And if it's okay with you, Doug, I'm gonna nick a photo of that tattoo and put it in the show okay. notes for this episode as well. And then there's a pretty cool article where you can read up the whole thing. I'll pop that link in there too. But it's absolutely fantastic. And I always joke, I say to people, if you want to get an MDOT, go and do it before you do the race, because you know you're not going to stuff it up if you've got the tattoo before you even start.
That's absolutely true. So I had to endure 9 years of people asking me, wow, that's a really unique tattoo. How many times have you been to Hawaii? And I would say, not yet, but working on it.
I love that. That is cool. Talk about speaking things into existence. Because it is. This sport is a lot about belief. If it was a logical thing, no one would do one, because it is just too far to even comprehend.
It is. I remember watching it as a younger person back in the 80s when it first was on, Wide World of Sports, and thinking, man, I can't even comprehend running 26.2 miles, much less the other stuff in front of that. And then, it's just one of my favorite books is by Henry David Thoreau. And he says that extravagance is judged by the size of your own backyard. And if you're, your biggest bit of exercise is getting off the couch and walking to the mailbox, then an Ironman is a little bit far to reach. But if you just keep working on it a little bit at a time, then, it becomes a very doable thing.
Absolutely. Doug, talk to me about your first sort of experience of an Ironman distance race, the Great Floridian. Was it as hard as you thought it was going to be? Tell me about your race. Was it, did it go according to plan, or was it way out there?
No, I pretty much, I think I trained with Training Peaks, which is great for, first time first timers. I was probably training 14, 15 hours a week, and I was, pretty diligent about it. I am, when it comes to training, I've always been and continue to be sort of a machine. If it comes up on the plan, it gets done. It doesn't matter what. So, I was able to get through, most without any issue. You have the same things that everybody else, like, you can't believe how much it hurts at times. Like, how much can I endure? But if you did the main thing is the mental piece. If you just focus on the present and, where you're at, not what happened before or what's up ahead, especially just focus on where you are. One step after the other, one leg rotation after the other, eventually it gets done.
Doug, one thing I love about your story, and I chat to some incredible athletes on the Kona Edge, one thing that I take away from yours is that it's been a process. It didn't happen overnight. And I chat to a lot of athletes where their first attempt at an Ironman, they end up qualifying for Kona and they go. But for you, that wasn't the case. I mean, you like you say, you walked around to that tattoo for many, many years before you actually qualified. Do you think you valued it more because it's taken a lot longer?
When you invest 9 years of your life into it, yeah, I'd say, yeah. From where I started, I was, my wife would kid me that I had skinny legs like my father's. So, I had a lot of muscle development, and that takes time. There's so much to learn about the process of training. Balance is one of the biggest keys of the whole process. I would come back from training sessions and I would be out, you know, on the bike in Florida in August for 4.5-5 hours, and then you know, run after, and then I'd sit down and I'd be, man, I'm so tired. I can't get up, and you know, being kind of crabby, as you would expect. And she, you know, very early on in the process, she who would come in and say, you know, you signed up for this, we didn't. So if you want us to support you, you got to keep balance. And that was huge to me, because it kept the sport where it needed to be, which is not the number one priority. And I think where people fall into a trap is where they make it their be all and end all, and everything else revolves around it. When I started to put it in the proper perspective is when I was able to really take a big step from being maybe, you know, top 10% age grouper to, you know, top 1 or 2%.
It's interesting you say that, because that is, I think, one of the things that triathletes and particularly Kona hopefuls battle with, is getting that balance right, that they almost feel they need to be this one-eyed, just totally focused on that. And I see it often, and I'm sure you do too, relationships falling apart around that sort of thing. And it's difficult. I mean, someone sitting listening to this thing now, they want to qualify for Kona. Their entire being is invested in this thing. Well, what advice would you give them? Is it a case of, you know what, sometimes you need to stop overthinking this thing, take a step back and do what you need to do. And when you're training, that's what you're focusing on, but you need to switch off sometimes.
That is for sure. And so what I would tell somebody is, number one, you need to get support, and you need to get 100% buy-in from your board of directors, your family, whoever that is. You need to make sure it works out financially with your job, because it doesn't do you any good to qualify for Hawaii if you can't pay to get there. So the you know, those two things are important. But then I feel it's incredibly important to segment your life at that point in time. You have work time, and you have training time, and you have family or personal time. And when you're training, that's all you're worried about. That becomes your job for that segment of time that you're training. When you're not training, you're doing something else. And that training, you need to step away from that, because if you don't step away from that, then, you know, that starts to trickle into other parts of your life. And that's where the things become out of balance. And, you know, I think you increase the opportunity for burnout.
Doug, what's the biggest lesson triathlon and Ironman in particular has taught you?
I'd say the biggest lesson that Ironman has taught me is that we are 10 times stronger and tougher than we think we are.
Fantastic. I could not agree more.
I had friends ask, I had a friend just text me yesterday, and he said about pacing. And I said, pacing? It's all out. You go all out. I don't pace myself in an Ironman. I go 100%, and it's riding that fine line between cracking and how long can my mind allow me to hold on. And that's how you go fast.
That scares me, Doug.
But in the end, it's fun, because as soon as you cross the finish line, all the pain goes away.
But
until the next day.
Yeah, the 2 days after, the DOMS strike. But I find that fascinating, because for me, that is what it boils down to. And if you think about racing that way when you're doing an Ironman, it's pretty tough. But the first time you race a sprint like that, it's pretty tough too. And you finally learn to adapt. And then the first time you race an Olympic, it's like that as well. And that's why we do the hard yards in training.
That's true. You just have to trust your training. And you know, go with what happens on race day, and just maintain calm composure and just stick with your plan.
Doug, let's talk about your process and plan to qualify first time around and what it took to get your sort of ticket to Kona.
Okay, I signed up. I think my first qualifying attempt was in Wisconsin in 2008, and I was, you know, top 3 or 4 in 70.3 races, so I felt I had a good shot. But when I came to the Ironman stage, I had done 3 or 4 at that point in time. when I got to Wisconsin. I think I finished 10th or 11th, and I was maybe 30 minutes, 20 minutes from a spot. And I thought, you know, I was really close, but in reality, I was miles away. So I went back the next year and I did the same thing, got a little bit closer, got within about 15 minutes of that slot. But still, that 15 minutes was so far away from where I was. And I really needed to go back to the drawing board and change everything I had done to get me from just, you know, run-of-the-mill age grouper to, you know, top 10 in an Ironman to be able to make that jump to the podium. So the third time I attempted was in Louisville, and this was 2011. And I had actually met a professional by the name of Nina Kraft. And we started training together before that race. She wasn't signed up for it, but I convinced her to do the race. And she actually won that year. And we became friends and have been very good friends from then on. And then at that point in time, I was, you know, being able to train with her. She taught me a lot. She taught me what a professional approaches training. And when I mentioned earlier about the job piece, this is where I was really able to see that when we were training, this was it. And work and everything else, that can work, that can be later. But right now, this is what we have to do. And then when you're done, you're done. And then you can focus on those things. So being able to compartmentalize that training and really focus to get the maximum benefit from it helped me take that next step.
And then, I mean, what was, yes, training like that, but where did you make the biggest strides? And in which discipline would you say is where you made the biggest strides that year to qualify?
Well, for after that year, I broke my leg in 2012, and I was out for the year. In fact, I was on crutches for 6 months, and I had to learn to walk again. And I didn't know if I was ever going to get to Hawaii at that point in time. But the funny thing is, I look back, that was God's way of telling me I needed to take a break. And when I did, I had to start from ground zero. I hadn't done anything for 6 months. I had to learn to walk. I was on crutches. And I got back to the gym, and I started doing leg work, and I really started to focus on the bike. I'd always been a decent runner, but I would get out of the water maybe 10th or 15th in my age group, and then I would get off the bike at 60th in the age group, and then I would hustle and finish 10th. So I was giving away all those spots on the bike piece, and it was one of those things where I didn't really love the bike, but to become really good, I had to embrace that. And so doing things like you know, long rides against the wind, hills and things like that, that I used to really not like so much, I had to learn to love them. And now they're my favorite things to do.
Awesome. You mentioned Nina. Funnily enough, she's also an Ironman South Africa winner back in the early 2000s. I think it's Jim Rohn who coined the phrase that you become like the five people you hang out with. Is that pretty important, surrounding yourself with good athletes and good people to get better?
Absolutely. One of my closest training partners is a Cat 1, Cat 2 cyclist, and we go out on Saturday and Sunday for long, steady state rides where he just goes down on his drops and puts his head down and hammers, and I sit off his wheel 30, 40 yards, and he basically motor paces me. Top athletes and you know, top runners who push you, and it, you know, you need to be pushed at those times to be able to dig deep, especially on days when you don't feel like you have it. They do, and you either hang on or get dropped, and so that helps. And when you have enough of those days in training, then race day seems easy.
Talk to me about that race where you qualified after 9 years. You've been working hard and putting in a lot of time and effort, and it eventually happens. Tell me what that feels like.
The race, the funny story the Saturday before Ironman Louisville in 2013, we had a young puppy, and he was in the kitchen snapping food off the stove. And so I jumped off the couch and went to grab him. And I had a shoulder injury from my party/softball days back in my 20s. And so when I went to grab the dog, my shoulder went out of the socket. So I was laying on the floor, dislocated shoulder. My wife was standing over top of me, giving me the riot act about, what have you just done to yourself? We've been through this thing last 5 or 6 years. You're going to qualify next weekend, but how are you going to do it with this shoulder? She actually went to YouTube and watched a YouTube video on how to put a dislocated shoulder back in place. And after a couple of shots, she put my shoulder back in. I didn't swim. Nina was also doing the race. I didn't tell her that what had happened until the Thursday before the race. We got into the pool and she asked what was wrong, and I told her. And that was the first time I had swam since I dislocated the shoulder. So my plan was, you know, just get through the swim without getting hurt, and then, you know, get on the bike. And what I learned in that race is that I went so deep on the bike. It's a fairly hilly course. I went so deep at some time, I thought, gosh, I'm not even gonna be able to run when I get off this bike. My legs are just shot. And then to be able to get off the bike and still, I think I ran a 3:20, something like that, to be able to get my slot. And then I had to, I finished, right? I was one off of the number of slots. And so I had to wait until the next day for the roll down. And they made you wait until like 11 o'clock. And I was, you know, patiently waiting, but kind of anxious. And then at like 10 minutes till, I said, well, what the heck? If somebody has not signed up for their spot, then they're not going to get it. So I went up and I said, could you tell me? And she looked in the 50 to 54 age group, or I'm sorry, 45 to 49 age group. And she said, are you Doug? And I said, yes. She said, this guy here, his name is Ken Welsh, and we've become Facebook friends since, he is not going to Hawaii. And I'm like, so you mean I get to go? And she said, yeah. So it was pretty emotional. I went and grabbed my wife at the table, the banquet table, and brought her up, and, you know, and it was a team victory, because without her and without my family, there's no way I could have ever gotten there.
It must have been pretty special arriving in Hawaii. Obviously, a lot of work gets done up into race day, but knowing what you had gone through to get there and get that qualification spot, arriving on the Big Island must have been pretty special.
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. The coolest thing about it was the flight from Los Angeles to Kona. Everybody on the plane was either they were in support of people on the island already. There was probably 4 or 5 athletes on the plane, but the plane was just electric. The energy was incredible. I fell in love with the island, you know, right when I stepped. That's the first time I'd ever been there, and it's amazing.
Doug, if I say the word Kona, what do you think?
The most amazing place on earth.
Simple as that.
Simple as that.
I love it. Talk to me about racing in Kona. I mean, for you who races in Florida, I mean, conditions, I don't want to say they're similar, but Florida can get pretty hot. It's pretty humid. I know a lot of the Europeans struggle with acclimatizing to the heat and humidity in Hawaii. For you, was that an issue, or did you find it like racing at home?
I found it like racing at home. The only difference is that the heat in Hawaii, because of the lava fields, kind of radiate around you from all sides. So as far as the temperature and the humidity level, it's the same. But you don't get scorched as much by the sun in Florida as you do in Hawaii. So you really got, in fact, last year in 2015, I got burnt horribly because of conditions. You really have to pay attention to your sunscreen.
Yeah, it is important. Tell me about your first racing experience in Kona and what it was like pitting yourself against the best triathletes in the world on the same course on the same day?
Well, that was a little bit overwhelming at to begin with, to because the island is big, but Kona itself is so small, and everybody there it's a freak show. Like everybody is so fit, and to be around them, you know, the first time, it was like, gosh, do I really belong here? And my, you know, Nina told me to go the first time and just experience it, have fun, soak it up. And, you know, then the next time, if you're fortunate enough to be able to qualify, then you race. So I did. I took that advice to heart. And then she told me I wasn't going to break 11 hours because I had just done Louisville 5 weeks before. So I set that as a personal goal. And I went out, and the swim piece, I learned that everybody swims fast in Hawaii. So you're not going to be swimming around anybody. So I just, after fighting and fighting and fighting, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to swim right in the middle of this pack. Like it's like a pack of fish. And then the bike course was, you know, I'd ridden part of it the few days before, but the bike course is tough, and there's no steep hills. But the hills and the combination of the wind is relentless. And at points on the way back into Kona, when the wind is hammered 20 miles an hour and you're going uphill, I just had to laugh because you can't get mad at it. There's nothing you can do. And then once I got on the run, I should have read the manual, because I just assumed that since it was a closed course out and back, that the special needs would be at mile 13 and not mile 17 or 18. And so I kind of ran low on fuel. I didn't realize how far the energy lab was. But I got through that. The run part is it's not an easy run. And to look at the times the pros run on that course is incredible. I mean, it's a hilly run. And that first run by the Save the grocery store up Pelini is the real deal. That is a nasty hill. But once you get back, you know, through the energy lab, which is, I had no idea, it was like 5 miles from the time you got in to the time you got out. And the pavement's really rough. And that makes it difficult for that piece. But then you finally do get your special needs bag. And then from that point on, I think for me, you're able to just like, you know, this is almost done. We only have 6 or 7 miles to finish, and you can handle this. And then the closer you get to the finish line, the more exciting it gets. And then when you make the left after you go down the hill on Pelini and you start seeing the crowds, and it's just the emotion is really indescribable.
Doug, whoever's done an Ironman will always remember the first one they've done and that feeling of finishing your first Ironman distance race. And once you've done a few, I don't want to say it loses its appeal, but you kind of forget how special it actually is. But going back or going and racing in a race like Kona, it almost all comes flooding back.
It does, because for me, having invested 9 years, day in, day out, training to get to that level, I think I never forget where I started, and hopefully I'll be able to keep that with me as I continue on with my career.
I mentioned that I chat to a lot of athletes who qualify sort of at first attempt, and their second or third Ironman race is Kona. Are you grateful that you've had to work as hard as you have to get to race on the Big Island?
Definitely. It just makes the It makes the story better. Everybody who gets to Hawaii has a story, and one is no better than the next. And mine is personal to my journey through unhealthy living and poor lifestyle and bad health. And now hopefully I can use it as a benchmark for my kids and my family, that, you know what, if you don't like the way your life is going, you have the ability to change it. And all you have to do is do that.
I grew up in a household. My dad ran ultra marathons when we were kids. And I'm seeing it with my kids now, with me doing these sort of things, doing Ironman and ultra marathons. My kids are starting to show signs that maybe one day they'd like to do it. You know, you're condemning your kids to doing crazy races like Ironman, Doug.
I think I am. My kids are. my son got his first real road bike for his birthday in March. They're both on swim team and they both do cross country, and I'm not going to push them to do it. If they want to do it, I'll be glad to help them out to do it, because it is such a the people that are involved in the sport are so positive and they're so great to be around at all levels, so encouraging, that if you're going to surround yourself with a peer group, I don't think there's any better peer group than ultra athletes, whether it be runners or triathletes or whatever the case.
Yeah, I joke like that. There are worse things your kids can do wanting to grow up. So I'm with you. I'd love them to do it. It's positive influences. I guess that's what it's all about.
Right.
Doug, let's talk about what's still left to achieve for you in the sport of triathlon. It's Ironman particularly. I mean, like a sprint distance race, you can have everything fall into place and you can have the perfect race. Same thing with an Olympic. But an Ironman, because it's such a long event and time-wise and distance-wise, there's often things that you can change and do better. And there's always, even if you have a good race, there's always a feeling of unfinished business. What's still unfinished for you? What do you still want to achieve in Ironman on the Big Island? What's the goals?
Well, I qualified again and went last year. And then, funny thing that my wife pointed out, I did it in Texas, and Texas is an awesome race because it's just like Florida, hot, nasty, humid. So it was a perfect race for me, and went out and had the worst swim of my life. I think it was at 114, 115 out of the swim, but never panicked, got on the bike and I knew it was hammer time. And then my wife as always was there to greet me when I came into T2 and told me that, if we wanted to go to Hawaii, I needed to get my butt moving. So it was a three lap run course. And then she caught me at the beginning of that and told me I needed to make up about 30 minutes and never a problem. And then she caught me at the beginning of the third lap and said I needed to catch six more guys. And then I wasn't running fast enough. I was starting to slack. And I was looking at my Garmin. I thought, well, all my mile splits are about the same within 5 or 10 seconds. So I don't know. She's crazy, but all right, let's get going. So I was fortunate enough to be able to get my slot even after that rotten swim. I placed third. So my goal was, all right, I can now compete with the very best in my age group on a world level. But the problem there is when I finished Texas and training for Hawaii, I kind of lost my balance a little bit and I overtrained and I injured myself. And I went to Hawaii with hopes of being able to get, you know, podium or top 10, and really had a bad day. So the goal, and that's another reason this year I decided not to go to Texas, to go to do something in the fall, to be able to focus on getting healthy again and really improving my bike, taking my bike to the next level so that and improving my swim, because these guys and gals that are, you know, finishing on podium or in top 10 in Hawaii, they don't have any flaws in their game. And so I need to spend another 9 or 10 months trying to work on those flaws, because when I go back to Hawaii, Lord willing, I want that podium.
I'm sure you do. Doug, as far as Texas, I mean, as we're recording this, it happened this past weekend. Aren't you glad you made the decision not to go back to Texas with the weather conditions they had this year?
You know, part of me says yes, and part of me says, well, you know, that would have been kind of fun just to, you know, to do well in that race and say, hey, doesn't matter.
It makes for good stories, doesn't it?
It does. I saw some video and at the finish line, and it was crazy. I don't know how anybody was able to race well there. Congrats to him.
Yep. Even if you didn't race well, even if you just finished that thing, that's huge.
That's
respect.
True.
Yeah, huge respect. Doug, it's been amazing catching up. I can't wait to do it again, where we chat about the sort of smaller or the shorter ones with the disciplines and what you've done to improve. But we'll save that for another time. Thanks for your time on the Kona Edge today. I loved sharing your story, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to get a lot out of it.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.
This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to thekonaedge.com/indoor. That's thekonaedge.com/indoor.